Bret Hart Radio is presented by Sharpshooter Funding in association with PodcastArena.com and Gao Media.
Are you a small business looking to get over, but you don't have all the funds you need? Well, there's a solution. Check out SharpshooterFunding.com. At Sharpshooter Funding, they know that they have a solution to fit your specific needs. Their team has the experience and knowledge to find you the best product for your specific situation. Whether you're a first-time customer or a repeat business partner, their team will fulfill your needs. Give them a ring at 416-238-0252. That's 416-238-0252. Or send an email to Dallas@sharpshooterfunding.com.
This is Bret Hart Radio. The best there is.
The best there was.
The best there ever will be.
Bret Hart Radio. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Here are your hosts. WWE Hall of Famer Bret the Hitman Hart, his sons Blade and Dallas, and WrestleZone.com's Nick Houseman.
It's Bret Hart Radio.
Bret Hart Radio.
Bret Hart Radio. Hey, this is Bret the Hitman Hart, and this is another edition of Bret Hart Radio. It's going to be a great show today. We got our special man on the scene here, Nick Houseman. Nick Houseman.
Close. Very close. It's good.
Old traits coming back there, Nick. Sorry about that.
It's okay. It's been a week. I understand.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks now.
Yeah, something like that. Of course, you got to introduce your son as well, not just me, right?
Of course, we got the dashing debonair Blade Hart here. He's going to give his commentary throughout the whole cast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, this is the Sharpshooter Podcast, our first podcast of the week here, guys. And, of course, it's going to be a big show. Brett's going to be giving his thoughts. Well, Brett Blade and I giving our thoughts on some of the big news stories from around the world of pro wrestling. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to be featuring part one of our interview with former UFC heavyweight champion Josh Barnett. Josh is, of course, doing commentary for New Japan Pro World right now on Access TV as well. And, Brett Blade, I know you guys actually know Josh. Josh, I believe, is trained with Harry in Italia before, correct?
Yeah, and I've known Josh now for quite a few years. He's he comes through town now and then, and he's a close friend of Harry's, and he's an accomplished pro wrestler aside from his UFC stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. He's been wrestling over in Japan for over a decade now, and of all the people that I've got to meet and talk to, when I was talking to Josh, I mentioned I work with you, Brett. He immediately was like, "Oh, I know Brett," and I was like, "Well, we got to get you guys together. This sounds very exciting." So,
yeah, we stay in touch, and when he has a big fight, I usually shoot him a text, and we've become friends over a period of time.
Absolutely, and of course, with the big news of Brock Lesnar coming back to UFC, there's too much to get into with Josh. But before we get into it here today, Blade, of course, we got to put over the main sponsor for the show. That is Sharpshooter Funding. So, Blade, what is going on right now with Sharpshooter Funding? I know you guys are always closing big deals and helping small businesses get the loans they need.
You know, we're just still grinding away. Paul Pitcher's a genius, man. We're really trying to blow the whole thing up here. We're thinking of expansions to a couple other countries here too, but we'll keep that a secret for now.
Okay, yes, under wraps. If you are a small business and you're looking to get a loan and the banks have not given you the green light, so to speak, reach out over to sharpshooterfunding.com and find out more there. Of course, if you're listening to this show, go over to iTunes, subscribe for free to Bret Hart Radio. 5-star ratings, comments, always appreciated. And, of course, you can find us over at podcastarena.com. But without further ado, it is time to go sharpshooting with Bret the Hitman Hart.
It's time to go sharpshooting. Sharpshooting. News and notes from professional wrestling and beyond. It's Sharpshooting with Bret Hart, presented by Sharpshooter Funding.
All right, it's time to go sharpshooting on Bret Hart Radio, and I got my killer Nick Houseman. Nick,
oh yeah,
we got some things to talk about. Let's get at it.
Oh, for sure. My clothes are all dirty. I do the digging around in the dirt, so you guys don't have to figure out what's going on in the business right now. Well, of course, the WWE did make it too hard to dig this today. As earlier, about an hour ago, actually, the news just broke, Brett, that Roman Reigns has been suspended for 30 days, effective immediately, for violating the WWE wellness policy. This, of course, after being put in the triple threat main event here for Battleground. I mean, are you as surprised by everyone else by this news?
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised because, I was kind of hoping that he could, somehow make a good run of being champion. And I think he, in a lot of ways, he never got the fair shake that he deserved. Failing the wellness policy could be a number of things. You know, if it was, for steroids or that kind of stuff, muscle enhancement or whatever you want to call it. I mean, if it was that category, you know, I don't know. I don't think he needed it for one. And B, it is what it is as a policy. And I'm all behind the policy. I think there should be none of that in wrestling. There doesn't need to be any of that in wrestling. And, you know, I don't know if there's a double standard. Some guys are allowed to take certain things and some guys aren't. Or there's, if there's a sort of a thin line between being found guilty and found innocent. I have no idea. As far as I know, the drug policy in WWE is pretty legit. And as far as I know, unless someone tells me otherwise, everybody's tested. And, you got to know you're going to get tested. So what you ever going to be dirty for if it turns out it's, say, steroids, or let's just say it's maybe something as minuscule as having a toke on a joint at a birthday party or something. Who knows? You know, it could be something really small or insignificant. The fact that they sacked him over it is kind of a shock to me. But, I think the rules are what they are. And I think, I don't know, I know when in the 90s when I was champion and they started the very, very serious drug policy and everybody had to comply, including Lex Luger and, the bodybuilders had to comply to it and all kinds of it was just the same thing. It's like you just can't take any chances. And, where it is today and how intense that. I know that drug test is pretty intense. Like they test you for everything from pills to, just about everything.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing for me is when I read this news, actually something you'd said, Brett, resonated with me. And it's what we were talking about with Seth Rollins last time, where the responsibility of the champion to not get hurt. Now, the news broke today, meaning he was probably tested a little while ago while he was still the sitting champion. I mean, is that a concern or would that be a worry for you knowing that while he was champion, something like this happened?
No, because I think the promotion or the company, you got to look at it from their perspective. They got him sort of built into a main event pay-per-view, which is a lot of money involved and a lot of money that's put into building this guy for this pay-per-view. And every pay-per-view is important to them. It's all huge money in the, it's everything they work for is the next pay-per-view and the next pay-per-view. And they build all the time. And they knew that he was guilty, say 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, they got to finish through with the storyline for the sake of the fans' sake and the business sake. And then as soon as that pay-per-view is over, like they've done, they've sacked him. So, I mean, maybe it was something a few weeks ago, but maybe they just got to not say anything till the appropriate time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting because on Raw last night, the show ended with them declaring we're going to have a Shield triple threat. Now, the interesting part about this 30-day suspension is going to be happening between now and Battleground. There's actually more than 30 days. So Reigns will still be able to be a part of the main event of Battleground, but will not be a part of any of the promotion, any of the build going into the show.
Well, like I say, you can only form a judgment or a thought on it once you know what it is. You know, if it turns out, like just say hypothetically, it was like marijuana was in his system for the first time or something. I don't know. A lot of people can overlook what happened, and if anything, it might make him more cool, maybe enhance his career.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Blade, you know Roman Reigns, he gets kind of a lot of negativity from a certain group of fans. If this guy comes back and they think that he's been doing something, I mean, doesn't it feel like they're going to be more likely to boo him even harder?
I think it depends on the fans, but I think it's kind of like what you're saying a few minutes ago. When you're a champion, you should conduct yourself like a champion. I think regardless of what it is, he should have been thinking a little bit harder than he did. I'm curious to know what exactly.
It's a dream come true, man. When they come in and say, we're going to make you the champion of the company, we're going to build everything around you. I know that's what they've done with him. And they've done that. It was originally Seth Rollins' ball, and then he got hurt, right? So, I mean, then they threw him the ball. And, it's like, I just know that when I was champion and they started drug testing, it was like the thought of failing my drug test was like, that's just not going to happen.
You got right. Too many people looking up to you at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at when I say, you know, Roman Reigns, this happened while he was champion. That's just a little head scratching to me, considering that I'm sure he was propped up the way you're talking about. You know,
I'm sure all the CM Punk straight edge fans are probably, you know, not going to be too pleased with his conduct here.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, of course, now you've got Dean Ambrose, who just won the World Heavyweight Championship at Money in the Bank after winning the briefcase and then immediately cashing it in. And people genuinely seem to want to like this guy.
Well, you know what Dean's always been able to do that that Roman had trouble doing was that he was able to get sympathy.
Yeah.
You know, whether he wrestled Brock Lesnar, even everything he did with, when you look at it, because I know a lot of guys didn't like his match at WrestleMania because he kind of just got annihilated by Brock Lesnar. But you know what it is about Dean is that he gets sympathy. People start to feel for him. They start to, you know, when he gets hit, they feel it. They kind of get into the, you know, the storyline of him being a hero, and he comes back and the people believe in him. And, you know, I've said for a long time that he's a great talent, and he's I'm glad he's finally, you know, had his chance to say, you know, he drank from the silver cup kind of thing. You know, he's nice to see him champion even for I don't know how long, but like I agree with the sentiment that it seems like the champions don't hold the belts very long anymore. I like the old days instead of these guys that are 5,000 time world champion like Triple H and stuff like that. Maybe they should be like 3-time champions. And they shouldn't win the title every 10 minutes. It's kind of, you know, guys like Bruno and Backlund, and there was a certain sort of reasonable length of time that a guy should get a chance to get over and prove that he was champion and sort of make history for the company. And, you know, this idea all the time that every time you turn on the TV that somebody else is new champion and they're starting over again for whatever the reason, I think is you undermine your own talent. I think, you know, probably the reason I think I got over as champion is because I kept the belt for a while. And even when I lost it pretty quick compared to some guys.
Yeah. With Dean Ambrose, though, you know, you talk about a long-term champion. Is he the guy you see as a long-term champion? I mean, he lost at WrestleMania to Brock Lesnar, and he was allowed to use weapons in that match. And now, I mean, he won this belt after a quick win over Rollins, smacking him with a briefcase from the back of the head. And then, I don't know, on Raw last night, he was still pretty, I'd say goofy, but he wasn't intense. You know, he didn't seem like very, like a proud champion. He was still kind of a goofball about it.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those things where it might take him a little time to find the right fit. And, you know, you might not find it in time. I mean, I remember when I was champion the very first time, it was very, very tough to sort of control your destiny and sort of take control of what your character needed to say and what it needed to do and what would get you over the most. And, you know, you got a lot of people telling you what to do and a lot of people controlling how you present yourself. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah. And, Blade, I mean, what's your take on Dean Ambrose as champ? Are you happy to see him, or do you think that you'd rather see somebody else at the belt right now?
I'm partial, but I kind of agree with you. Like I think it plays into his character, the whole asylum thing, but I don't see it for as much as I think a lot of other people. He's just not his gimmick just doesn't align with me, I think is what it is. But
yeah, they tell you he's a lunatic, but I don't know if he does enough crazy stuff to really make you.
It kind of reminds me of Roddy Piper a little bit.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially when he's on commentary. He was on fire last night during commentary for the main event between Rollins and Reigns. And, yeah, I don't know. With Piper, though, there was always kind of that edge, though, where he may clock you with a coconut or something crazy. And I don't know with Ambrose. It doesn't feel like they've let him go, you know, let the leash out that far to let him do something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, or that he just sort of comes across kind of like a kind of a half-assed psycho.
Yeah, he's a goofball. He's a jokester. He's the class clown, you know? Not to say he's not, I mean, very talented wrestler. I just want to see a little bit more bite from Dean Ambrose. But talk,
yeah, some more violence. I would like to see some, maybe a bit of color, Nick, would be nice.
Yeah, I've seen this. I've seen CZW matches with this guy. I mean, light tubes. I mean, not that you need all that stuff, but this man is not afraid to get crazy. And they just, I don't know, they haven't given him the leash that I'm surprised they haven't. But somebody that they are giving a little bite to is, of course, Natalya. Natalya turned heel, laid out Becky Lynch after their loss at Money in the Bank. Is this time for Natalya to be a bad guy?
You know what? I actually liked it. I thought it would kind of caught me off guard. I didn't expect it. Natty looked really intense. She didn't, you know, even on Raw, she looked really intense when she took Becky out again while she was cutting a promo, which is almost kind of funny how it looked. You know, it's like, yeah. She's like a little cat jumping on a mouse. You know, it's like, I think it's a nice little change for Natty. And she's been the sort of the darling for such a long time. You know, you can only pull that trigger so many times. And I think it's not a bad idea. The timing's not bad. Say whatever you want, but when Natty was throwing those elbow smashes on what's her name? Those are some of the best punches in the business. I mean, they looked so good, those elbow smashes and those punches when she was rocking her and rocking her and rocking her. When she turned, it was good. It was really good after the match. I thought, you know, that was, I texted her and told her that's some really good work, really good punches, good action, good heat, really intense. She didn't, that's what I like about Natty is that she's from the old school. She makes, you know, she gets behind the storyline and she's going to turn heel. I think it's a big crossroads for her. And I think she knows, you know, it's not the kind of thing you want to do again tomorrow or the next day or keep swapping back and forth. But I think it's a good opportunity for her now. The timing's really good and, it should be fun for her.
Yeah, and I mean, Charlotte also, you know, heel right now at the moment. And you've got these generational women now as bad guys. Do you keep them apart? Would you put them on separate brands when the draft comes along here? Or would you like to see them, you know, be friends with each other? I don't know.
You could go either way. That's something for, you know, legitimately, I think, for creative to talk about instead of sit around and go, you know what would be the most fun is this. How about we try this idea? And, you know, so I think both girls, Natty and Charlotte, for that matter, have a good sense of what would work best for both of them. And, both being heel, it was kind of stuff that Sean and I could have done forever back in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Blade, I mean, what was it like for you seeing Natalya turn heel like that?
I love it. I think it's, you know, a fresh start for her. And like my dad said, you know, she has been the darling for a long time. So I think it's, you know, it'd be nice to see a darker side from Natty.
Yeah, I agree. Another bit of news coming out this week. Of course, yesterday, the WWE made it official. The first live SmackDown July 19th on USA Network. They're bringing back the draft, the WWE draft returning. First of all, what do you guys think of the draft? Is this a gimmick that you guys think's engaging, that'll get people to turn the dial?
I have to admit that there's a curiosity that makes me kind of smile, like, okay, yeah, let's pretend there's a draft and how would it go and who would you pick? And it'll be interesting. I mean, why not? Sounds fun to me.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it can be fun. And, you know, one of the things that's floating around right now, the idea that there could be former talents coming back to be drafted to one of these brands, you know, a legend or whoever it may be. And one of those names that we were buzzing about just before we went on the air here was, of course, Kurt Angle. Is now the time for Kurt to come back? Would he be a welcome addition to the mix?
I think so. You know, anytime Kurt would like to go back, I think he, A, made a huge contribution. You know, he was a great WWE headliner and champion and a really hard worker in the ring. And I think he gave a great effort the whole time he was there. And whatever circumstances he left WWE under and whatever issues he's had since then, I think the point is that he was a great talent and a great wrestler. And, you know, if he wanted to come back, I would say that'd be great. They ought to bring him back because he deserves to come back. And he deserves, the final, like what they've done with Sting, for example, is nice. Like, he deserved that. He worked really hard for a really long time. And he was the one guy that was in WCW and never made it to WWE. And, you know, when it all comes in the end, it's like he's going to get sort of missed, or he gets just, everything he did didn't count. It's like, it's nice that it did count and it does mean something. And WWE honored him and brought him out and gave him some more moments in the ring. And, you know, I think it's great. I love that. And, sometimes that's a good thing. And bringing some of these guys back, you know, whether it's Matt Hardy or Jeff Hardy or whatever, either one, you know, or, you know, I wish they could bring back some of these guys, like Edge would be nice if they could bring him back. You know, I know they can't, but I mean, he was such a great talent. And, you know, I thought about like Jericho is probably one of the last old timers left. Like he's one of the old school, one of the old boys from WCW. And there's a lot of history there. Yeah. People forget WCW has been closed down since 2002.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a long time since these guys have forged their careers. And
even Ray.
There's not that many guys left. Ray's gone. Edge is done. Test is dead. You know, like there's so many guys you look back on and it's like, yeah, there's not that many guys. Like Jericho's the last of the.
Goldust is still out there. Yeah. Goldust is still going.
Goldust is another one. Even Big Show, you know, he was around.
Yeah.
You know, but they're all sort of nearing the end. Even Mark Henry just started around that time. And. You know, he's for sure an old timer now.
I know we got to bring Josh Barnett here on in just a moment. I'm sure TJ's queuing him up right now. But you did bring up Matt and Jeff, the Hardy Boys. I got to ask you guys, it's been 2 weeks. In the last 2 weeks, this video has been released that the Hardy Boys did for TNA Impact Wrestling of a contract signing they did at their home. Is there any chance you guys have had a chance to watch this video?
No, I didn't see it.
This vignette. Blade, do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen it either.
Okay. For the next week's show, just as it's a 5-minute long video, you guys need to go watch it's affectionately called the Brother Nero Hardy Boys home contract signing. It's pro wrestling. It's a very interesting thing that the Hardy Boys have done. I think that people would get a kick out of hearing your take on this Brother Nero video. So.
All right. Well, I'll watch it. I saw them just, I don't know, ten days ago in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
They looked great. They looked best I've ever seen them. They looked really fit and healthy and happy. And, you know, they're two great ambassadors for wrestling, if you ask me, especially from that generation. They're really, truly great workers and hard workers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I know that when Matt is available here, he would like to come onto the show. I've already reached out to him, and I'm sure we get a hold of Jeff as well. But, yeah, go watch that video. And people at home right now, that are listening to this podcast that have seen this video are probably very excited to hear your reaction to this video right now, Brett and Blade. So till next week, we'll sit on that one. But right now, we'll wrap up the sharpshooting with Bret Hart and Blade Hart, and we are going to kick it over now to our very special interview, part one of our interview with former UFC heavyweight champion Josh Barnett.
All right, this is Bret Hart, and I want to bring on my guest for the you know, the star of the show today is Josh Barnett. You know, he's number 8 ranked UFC heavyweight once upon a time, you know, facing Andre Arlovski for 9th ranked UFC Fight Night 93 on September 3rd. Pro wrestling debut in 2003 in New Japan. Trained by Billy Robinson. He's a great catch wrestler and he's a personal friend of mine and Harry Smith, former UFC champion. And he's also a coming commentator with Jim Ross for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Josh Barnett, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. And it's been a while since I've gotten a chance to sit down and talk with you as well.
Well, I know you got a big fight coming up in this is at the end of summer, right? End of August?
September 3rd. So, yeah, so you can say it that much. I mean, right in the beginning of fall there, but... you know, there's a good lead in there so that I can get in all my time with New Japan and everything else going and make sure to keep my camp good and strong and show up 100%.
Yeah, I know. I mean, to me, when I think of what you do for a career, the UFC and all that, I really think that it must be tough to fluctuate back and forth between that and the pro wrestling and sort of keep your eye on the tiger kind of thing. It's got to be kind of tough because they're two totally different mediums.
You know, I thought that would be the case when I was in New Japan and I was over there fighting all the time. But to be honest, because of the way I was trained as a professional wrestler, the way I approach professional wrestling, it was actually a lot easier for me to take fights at the end of tours and things like that. I mean, your body takes a good wear and tear, that's for sure. But, you know, if I was on tour and we were doing big houses, I would run the stadiums of every single place we would hit. I would find my days off to lift. And being in New Japan, I had a lot of guys with fighting backgrounds, catch backgrounds, Greco-Roman and amateur backgrounds, and some guys with kickboxing skills too. So I could get in a lot of work that way, stay sharp and finish up my last 2-3 weeks with like Billy and Makoto Oe over in Japan, and then go right in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that, you know, like pro wrestling is a good way to stay in pretty good shape and stay limber and not have to, like you can use it as a way to prepare yourself for the other side of things like UFC fights.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And I think you could probably give a better opinion on this than I could. I mean, with all your experience, but that if you're going out there and you're working with guys that are super skilled, that have talent, and you can go out there and put together all kinds of match. You could incorporate things that you want to work on in your fight even, and go make all these things happen and go get out of the ring and not be hurt. Not I mean, maybe you beat up a little bit like a workout, but not hurt because they have such good skill.
Well, you know, I remember when Ken Shamrock made the jump to WWE, you know, and he refereed the match I had with Steve Austin, I think was his debut in WWE.
Yep.
But I remember when I had met him, I think a year before, I said, you know, you should think about doing the pro wrestling again. I knew he did it in Japan, and we talked. We met at a coffee shop or something like that. And, you know, he told me that he had injured his wrist and that he was off from fighting. Maybe he could never fight again. And I told him, that's why you should do the pro wrestling. I said, do the pro wrestling and heal your hand up. And then when you go back, you can do the UFC again, which I think is what he ended up doing. But he found wrestling is a good way to make some money, stay in shape, and save his body for the real fights.
And you know, that makes perfect sense, and I can agree with that. I also felt that being in New Japan and performing as a professional wrestler day in and day out actually made me a better fighter. It made me better in the ring. I had better ring awareness. I had better control and better flow and feel with my opponents later on in my career by being a professional wrestler, by getting to go on tour and be in that ring.
You know, I saw, I think it was last year when Cormier was watching Rollins win the title at WrestleMania, and he was up in the top, way up at the top somewhere watching the pay-per-view, and someone had him on a handheld camera, and he was just going crazy when he won the title and all that. And I just wondered, like, how do you, a lot of the UFC guys that are, like, especially some of the toughest guys, seem to be real big wrestling fans?
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of them out there, and there are some serious marks in the wrestling industry, or in the fighting industry. I mean, it's just bound to happen, right? They're people, too. And you know, not everyone's immune to the stuff that we go out there and do in terms of getting a hold of somebody's attention and their heart.
As a UFC fighter and an accomplished fighter, when it comes to pro wrestling, who are the guys that you sort of gravitated to, say, even as a kid, that made you go, that's the kind of wrestling you kind of believe worked and that made you think pro wrestling was something cool?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a big fan of yours and Jim Neidhart's. I liked Demolition. I loved the Road Warriors. I liked Dusty Rhodes. Macho Man Randy Savage and Rick Rude and Jake the Snake. So, you know, I got a good variety of what the WWF was doing at the time and then what Crockett Promotions or NWA was doing out in Atlanta. And I would watch both of them as much as I could, loved it. And then when it came to seeing the Japanese stuff, which I was introduced, you know, some from the WWF when they had like the Oriental Express with Saito and I forget, it was George Takano maybe? And then when WCW started bringing a lot of Japanese talent over, then I didn't know what was different at first, but something stood out to me in a certain, just an approach, right? And then getting to see Antonio Inoki and Akira Maeda and Nobuhiko Takada and Minoru Suzuki and guys like that, then it was just, it blew my mind that wrestling could be that intense as well and that fight oriented.
Yeah, you know, I that's what I always loved about wrestling, or I miss, it's not done enough really, is the realism, you know. And the Japan, the guys you just named, like Inoki, they always brought realism to wrestling and made you think shoot holds worked and the psychology of a head and arm or a headlock or an arm bar. Or, yeah, they always made you believe it. And, you know, it's a sort of an art to the old school wrestling that goes all the way back through, you know, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, all of it. They were all guys that had wrestling backgrounds that, you know, did their best to make wrestling look real or look like the best conditioned athletes in the company or in the business. And, you know, I think, you know, like Japanese wrestling, I really liked, you know, a lot of the great wrestlers that worked over, like Inoki was a great wrestler. Fujinami was a great wrestler. Tiger Mask was a great wrestler, and there's been lots of them since then. I remember Takato when he was just a kid, when he was just one of the young boys, and you know, and he was a good, hard looking, good looking wrestler and a hard working ring, you know, technician back then. And that's, I'm glad he had a great career. And you know, they know how to teach you in Japan. They really do. I got taught by two Japanese wrestlers. They taught me how to fall and how to throw kicks and how to throw stomps. And they were the best executioners of professional wrestling, for sure.
Yeah, and I think that that New Japan Dojo, the whole Japanese dojo mentality of, one, holding tryouts that not everybody gets to pass, and two, teaching them all basic fundamentals, making them shoot on each other in the ring or in the gym, and teaching them the reality of wrestling so that they understand the difference between just going out and doing moves and having that knowledge, that personal understanding of what a fight is, because wrestling is combat. It's a fight. It's a struggle. And while it allows us to have more liberty with how we tell that story, it's still a fight. And, you know, people like yourself, I mean, if you were to talk about all the things that you did to break in, Brett, all the training that you went through, all the stuff that you did before you ever even hit a ring, I think a lot of guys nowadays wouldn't even be in the business because they wouldn't be willing to go through all that.
Well, I know when I was in the business, it was important to have a good wrestling background, a good, you know, I knew that. And I could say that there was a lot of times in my career as a Stampede wrestler and as a wrestler in Japan, and even in WWE, you know, the fact that you could handle yourself in the ring and wrestle somebody down if you had to was always a feather in your hat. You know, the fact, I don't think it had to happen very many times, but when it did, it was important to be a good wrestler. And even in the execution of the moves and how to put certain moves on and look like they're putting on pressure and applying some kind of hold that puts a lot of stress on a certain joint in a certain way. You know, it's such an art form to do it right. And, you know, I'm lucky that I came from that era where I got to learn that stuff from guys like Inoki would be one, and Nick Bockwinkel and Harley Race and a lot of those guys that were – Dynamite Kid was a great wrestler to work with and learn from. And Japan had some phenomenal workers. Fujinami was a real gifted, talented wrestler.
Oh, he was incredible as well. You know, guys like him were responsible for creating a whole new approach to wrestling, even, you know, bringing in, you know, the dragon suplex and the dragon leg screw and some different aspects to wrestling. And, you know, he wasn't the biggest guy to start off with, but I mean, Fujinami's not a small man, but he moved as somebody that was much smaller than he was. He was incredible. The first time I ever met Fujinami, I was brought out to do, I think, an in-ring gimmick deal with Nagata. And so I show up, I'm just kind of wearing some workout clothes, and I'm walking around the ring and watching all the boys in there. They're in their wrestling and going for holds on each other, shooting. So I'm watching and go, oh, all right. So I get up on the ring and I'm watching. And after a little bit, I go in there and I start giving a few pointers to some guys, and they're like, hey, I want to wrestle you. Okay. So right then and there, man, we get down on the mats, and you know, me and I'm a Tiger Mask for me and Minoru Tanaka. Why am I stumbling on his name right now? The guy with the it'll come to me at some point. But a bunch of the boys in there, they all wanted to roll, and so all right. So I went over there and I just started cranking and stretching every single guy I got a hold of, and. I look up and Fujinami's off, just standing there in his suit, just watching. And I get out of the ring after working with the guys and teaching them some stuff. And he comes up to me and he goes, you remind me of watching Carl Gotch back in the day. And I just remember just thinking, holy crap, I can't believe he just said that. Wow. You know, I mean, those are the guys that trained the guys that trained me.
And that's for anyone that's in wrestling knows that that's probably like the ultimate compliment, you know. It's for that, for the wrestler you're talking about, that's a Carl Gotch was there was only one Carl Gotch, that's for sure.
Yeah, I wish I'd gotten more time to work with Carl. I thought he was a fantastic coach. I thought he was had a great mind for fighting and wrestling, you know. And I'm very lucky that I got to spend years under Billy Robinson, who was, you know, he could teach you how to go out there and wow a crowd, or teach you how to go out there and light a guy up with your hands, take and put him down and hook him and be done with him. And Billy was a great coach, and you know, I miss him a lot. I know Harry misses him a lot, but I was really glad to bring as much of Billy as I could to everybody that was wanting for that out there. And you know, some of these old timers, Dick Cardinal just passed away, and another old Kearney wrestler. So I mean, they're out there, but there's few and far between.
You know, I have a funny story about being with Carl Gotch and Dynamite Kid over in Japan on a train. We were on a long train ride going somewhere. But I remember Dynamite, who had already had Carl do it to him before, where Carl had put a sleeper hold on him for about literally about 1 second and put him completely out cold. And I remember he was telling me on the train, I kind of was like, not 1 second. He goes, yeah, 1 second. He goes, here, I'll ask him. And he brought him over, and again, he goes, I want you to show me that sleeper hold again. And Carl Gotch put him in a sleeper and put him out right there on the, put him completely out cold and like barely even squeezed his head. He squeezed his head for just a fraction of a second.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is so cool. You know, you see now whenever you watch wrestling and you see these guys fighting in a sleeper hold for like 20 minutes and they're reaching for the ropes, which I'm guilty of numerous times in my career.
Sure.
And then you think of Carl Gotch putting Dynamite Kid out in exactly like 1 second flat. It's like, you know, these guys are, you know, they're a special breed of people that know how to do these things, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and
for sure.
I want to jump in real quick. Last time I talked to you, Josh, I know that you, we talked a little bit about kind of the current style of wrestling and how it's more like a dance and less like a fight. And I just wanted to get your guys' kind of take on, you know, the way the direction the pendulum is moving in the pro wrestling business. Do you think it's moving further away from looking like real fights, or do you think it'll eventually swing back towards the kind of style you guys are talking about right now?
I think there's some kind of a split going on. I think that there, I have a handful of guys right now, like this cat, Tim Thatcher, and I'm training Shayna Baszler. Also, Natty Neidhart comes out and trains under me and Shayna Baszler. I train Harry whenever I can. And there's other guys that are coming and training with me, like J.R. Kratos. He's another one from the indie circuit to, you know, some of the bigger stuff that are incorporating a lot more of the catch wrestling into what they do to bringing back more of that reality. Because, you know, the thing is that when you learn how to wrestle legit, how to be a full fighter, it actually makes, even if you, no matter how acrobatic or exotic you want to wrestle in the ring, it allows you to build the bridges to make it all more realistic, and to keep the crowd more intently watching, to keep them more on that hook, you know. Because if it looks like, oh, back elbow, 1, 2, 3 of them, of course, you know, all the patterns and all the typical stuff, they just kind of sit around and clap and cheer and you know, kind of get their own stuff in, because the crowd is kind of a gimmick now. And then they wait for what they think is the go home, because they've all seen it all before. But when you don't ever let them have that kind of tempo, when you don't keep everything so regimented in terms of a rhythm and a choreography, it throws them off.
I've always thought that the best professional wrestling has to always try to pretend to be totally real and have some kind of real roots to real wrestling and UFC kind of fighting and submission holds. And, you know, there's an art to it. And, you know, I think there's a reason why reality sells. It's because that's what sports are all about. And pro wrestling is just a, sort of a it replicates what you get from real sports. And you know, I really like when I look back, like, let's say Japanese wrestlers, and I'm curious to know you know, what Josh thinks of guys like Shinsuke Nakamura, that he's on NXT, and he had a a really good kind of shoot kind of pro wrestling match with a couple of different guys. I think it was Sami Zayn, and then it was somebody else I just saw like just shortly a few days ago, another guy. But he's, to me, he's such a great talent, and he brings all that unorthodox kind of wrestling, but at the same time, he brings realism with the odd real wrestling hold and the real type of submission and the real types of throws, and just, you know, he's different than all the others. He's not that cookie cutter wrestler. I like my wrestlers to be, you know, vary in style and bring a little Mexican to their work, and to bring a British style wrestling and a little of this and a little of that. And, you know, it's great to be able to pick and choose and, you know, sort of develop into whatever kind of wrestler you think will bring all those things to life. And, you know, always, to me, all the great wrestlers, the greatest wrestlers that ever were in the business were guys that could really wrestle, or at least really guys that could make it look real, like Pat O'Connor even. And, you know, you could just go on like Luthez and, you know, the guys that keep the tradition of what wrestling's supposed to be like. You know, it's supposed to play off that all the time. And the more real it can get, is what I think it's really missing from wrestling. I know it's great to have a lot. I thought this year's WrestleMania was a show that was lacking in wrestling. Like, there wasn't any real great matchups of worker versus worker, or at least not enough of it. And, you know, I'm a guy that loves the kind of, you know, catch as catch can wrestler that Josh is talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you 100% in that pick and choose. I mean, not everybody should go out there and be the same wrestler, but when you treat things with the right sort of respect for reality, for what it is, when you treat the, you know, holds as serious and dangerous as they really are, and you don't just sit out there and just get stretched out and just sell for 2.5 minutes, it's like, well, you'd be broken, you'd be done, you'd have tapped out by now, or passed out, or what have you. You just killed the submission. Or, you know, if you're jumping onto the top of the ropes and hitting a guy 10 times with a closed fist, I mean, he should be bleeding all over the place. Not to mention, you just stood on a guy in the ropes for 10 seconds when he should have been counted out with 4. But, you know, it's just little things, but it helps you to put all your other stuff into perspective. And one thing I took a lot from Inoki in terms of working was, he would tell me to look at your opponents, look at how they move, look at how they're built, look at what their finish holds are. And think about that in a realistic way. How do you keep from getting caught in that finish hold? How do you work against this guy? How do you use the ring even to your advantage, depending on how that wrestler works and how he's built?
For advertising and business inquiries, please email info@sharpshooterfunding.com.
Thanks for listening to the Sharpshooter Podcast, everyone. Don't forget to subscribe to Bret Hart Radio absolutely for free over on iTunes. Those 5-star ratings and comments help us out quite a bit. We're going to be back on Friday with a brand new episode of the Hart Family Vault featuring part 2 of Brett's interview with Josh Barnett, the 4 out of 10 for the week, and of course the Ask the Hitman segment. We'll also be taking a look back at the 1994 Monday Night Raw match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship between Bret Hart and the 1-2-3 Kid.
Bret Hart Radio is a TJ DeSantis production. In association with Nick Hausman and Sharpshooter Funding, Bret Hart Radio. Its content is intended for private use only.